Thanks, Dave. If I'm thinking about how do I see the world, well, some people see life, don't they, as a sort of a game to win. They are looking to get up the ladder of success. And I really, really admire that ambition and competitiveness. Me, I'm not so much like that. I don't have that competitive winning streak in me. No, I'm a little bit more relaxed, a little bit more chilled out, a little bit more philosophical in my thinking and want to take things at a little bit of a slower pace. I guess sometimes I am a little bit slow at making decisions at times because I like to think things over, mull things over, which means at times I just take a little too long perhaps to make decisions. I'm more of an introvert than an extrovert. I guess I have two main questions that drive my life, and that question is, how can I help people and what can I learn? They're the two things that sort of I look at the world through those questions. What can I do to help people? And what can I do to learn more stuff and help others learn? So that means I ask that really annoying question that children ask, the why question. I like to know why. So I'm the person that everybody gets frustrated at when you're watching a movie and it's a real life movie and it's about, you know, a real life event. And I'm the person on the phone Googling to see whether that really happened. Anyone like that? Yeah, great, good, you're my kind of people. and everyone's like, for goodness sake, it's just a movie, just watch the movie. But I'm one of those frustrating people. I'm also somebody who loves, because I love learning, I just like writing essays and doing qualifications for fun. I kind of don't understand why people don't think like that, perhaps. I love a list. Does anybody love a list? Oh, I love a list. I really do. I make lots and lots of lists. I don't always get a lot done on the list. I'm really quite good at making lists, but not always very effective at prioritizing things. And therefore, I don't always get what I need to do done. But I do love a color-coordinated calendar. Come on, that's it. That's what we're talking about, a coloured coordinated calendar. It's the best thing. Again, like I said, I don't always prioritise really, really well, but I do love having that. Yes, that's a little bit about me and how I see life.
I on the other hand, I'll write retrospective lists, okay, to just kind of prove to myself that I've achieved something that day. I'm kind of quite direct, hopefully not abrupt, but fairly direct, certainly focused, there is always a plan in everything. I mean, like, kind of in every way that you see life, there is a plan. Can't sit still for very long, always like to be doing something. Lots of ideas, although not all of them are good, as my team will attest to. I like to think that I listen, but I don't always achieve it. I'm fairly consistent, so I'm not going to be up and down emotionally. You kind of know what you're going to get when you bump into me and spend some time with me. I'm not interested in the detail. I need variety to keep me engaged, and I operate best when there are high stakes, okay? So when we had to kind of deal with the college during COVID, that's when I came fully alive, because there was something we needed to fix and get on with it. So as you can see, Nicole and I have got slightly different outlooks on life. Why don't you just take literally 30 seconds to turn to the person next to you and do the same exercise, okay? Just a little window into you, and just 30 seconds each. Off you go.
Okay, folks, Oh, sorry, I'm going to cut across your conversations, but we will give you an opportunity to speak again a little bit later. First of all, we just want to outline, why is self-awareness important? Why exactly does it matter? And a great place to start when looking at this question is in the Bible. Because I think we'd all agree, if it's written in Scripture, it's probably important for us, and it probably matters. So we start here with 2 Corinthians 13:5. Examine yourselves to see whether you are in the faith. Test yourselves. There's this call in Scripture for us to examine ourselves, to test ourselves, as it were, to scrutinize our own conduct and to see if we are following God's will and acting according to God's will. Paul is speaking to the church in Corinth at this moment, and he's speaking to lots of different behaviors, and he's asking them to look at their motives, to look at their actions, and to assess the current condition of their heart. Jeremiah did the same when he called the people of God to that honest self-evaluation. And then we look at Romans chapter 12, verse 3. For by the grace given to me, I say to everyone among you not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think with sober judgment, each according to the measure of faith that God has assigned. The measure of faith that we have comes from God. So too, the spiritual gifts that Paul talks about later on in the passage, they're from the grace of God. So things are given to us by God, therefore we're not to think too highly of ourselves. This self-awareness, this realization to be humble and to walk in humility. We can go to 1 Timothy 4:16. It says, keep a close watch on yourself and on the teaching. Keep a close watch on your life, to think about your conduct, to think about your demeanor. And if we're leaders, there's this call as well to think about sound living, but to think about our teaching as well. And are we teaching well? We have this responsibility before God not to lead people astray by our actions and behaviors and conduct, but also not to lead people astray by what we're saying and what we're teaching. It's imperative that we keep this close watch on ourselves. And then 1 Corinthians 8, don't let what you do cause others problems. Now, that's not actually written in the passage, but it sort of summarizes that whole chapter. Because in that chapter, it's about the food being offered to idols. You recall that passage. But there's this consideration there that we are to think about other people and to think about where they are on their journey with God. We're to be mindful of our actions and what we're doing, because we might do something that's okay and acceptable and right, but it might affect them. It might have an effect on their beliefs and their thinking. So we need to be careful. Self-awareness is this idea that actually we recognize that we can be fully right, but we can also be fully wrong at the exact same time. And this passage here kind of indicates that idea, just to be careful that we're not saying that, oh, we're so right, this is absolutely right, and actually it's causing difficulties for somebody else. Self-awareness is not just about being self-reflective for our own personal journey, but about thinking about others as well. Discovering sometimes those blind spots in our own lives, things we might not be able to see but might hinder other people. And then finally, we've got this verse in Corinthians 12, 14. For the body does not consist of one member, but of many. If the foot should say, because I'm not a hand, I do not belong to the body, that would not make it any less part of the body. And I think it's a great reminder that, you know, we look across this room right now, and you just looked across before when we were all worshiping together, and you saw this kind of one body, but with so many different parts, that we are unique and we are different. And God has given us different talents and different gifts and different strengths and different stretches. We all come together in our uniqueness, but we come together as one body. And it's a wonderful thing to celebrate. I'm going to hand over to Dave.
So the question we're asking is, well, why does this matter in church ministry? How does this affect me as a leader working in the Ealing Pentecostal movement? Why should I be concerned about my self-awareness when it relates to me and my team? So what we're going to do is we're going to look at about six or seven fairly stereotypical perspectives, things that you might be able to go, oh, I think I've worked with someone who's a bit like that. Or maybe I can recognize some of that in myself. Please forgive if I'm being kind of slightly over-egging the point, you know, to kind of make the point. But it's just trying to emphasize maybe some of the challenges we can come across as different personalities on the same team. So first of all, we have the fixer. The fixer is the person that really just wants the job to be done, and maybe because they're desperation to get the job done, they don't really care how it gets done. They might even run over people in order to get it done. And certainly if it's the senior leader, they probably won't leave space or time for anybody else to really play a valuable contribution. So there's no room for development. There's no space for that person to be able to feel the stretch and deal with the disappointment of failure, because the fixer comes in and just gets it all sorted. Because it's more important to be seen to be doing well and to achieve than to develop people on your team to get the job done. The challenge is with that is it can create a bit of a bottleneck, you know, within an organization as it grows or starts to get bigger. You can also have that sense of control that nobody feels that they can do anything without getting the leader's permission, because permission's not been devolved or given away. I remember getting my first job at 16. I was working for a caretaker in a private boys' school, and I was working with literally the caretaker, who was a fixer, but he was also a fixer in personality. And even at 16, I stumbled across the fact that if I stood back long enough, I could watch him do the job and get paid for it. Because he got so into it, he wanted to do it rather than let me have a go and make a mess of it. So I just kind of followed him around, letting him do everything and getting the salary at the end of it. So the second one is mismatch. When you come across somebody whose expectations and worldview is so wildly different from your own that it can lead to conflict, it can lead to challenge, because they just see the world differently than you are. So the obvious one is the task person and the people person. He's in the room, I won't embarrass him, but I used to work with someone who was an out-and-out people person, and I was an out-and-out task person. And if we ever traveled together, I would get frustrated because he wanted to stop and speak to everyone. I just wanted to get the job done. You know, and unless you know that about yourselves, it can cause some serious tensions and challenges. Also, what about stages of life mismatch? You know, you've got no dependents and no kids and no one to look after and no one to cook tea for, but you're working with a younger associate minister who's got all of those responsibilities and kids coming out of school at 3 o'clock, and you're trying to balance the tension of employment, calling, ministry, alongside just doing life. Where are the boundaries? What does it mean to do ministry? Maybe sometimes we use that term calling at the expense of creating healthy boundaries. How do we deal with mismatches and expectations? Then you got the third one, sabotage. Behaviors that you've developed over time that maybe you're not aware of. I'll give you a few examples that you're an over-talker. So you go into a meeting, the meeting's a 45-minute meeting, you come out of the meeting and someone's spoken for 40 minutes of that meeting and you think we've achieved nothing. They're not intentionally trying to sabotage the meeting, but you just haven't got anything done because of the lack of self-awareness that somebody is bringing into that space. Or the next one is the detail driller. So you come up with a brilliant idea that you've had in the car on the way to work, and it gets kind of hosed out with a fire extinguisher of detail because before you've had time to flesh it out, yes, but. And they start kind of giving all the legislation that needs to kind of be matched before you can even think about delivering on that. Or the pessimist whose glass is half empty, or I've tried it before and it didn't work. Sabotage can so easily quicken. It's often unintentional, but it is something you might recognize in yourself, or you've maybe been in a meeting with somebody else. Okay. I've rephrased this one on my notes to the mild narcissist because I didn't want to be kind of too harsh, you know. So narcissism, thinking about ourselves, it's all about me. They make life about themselves. So any illustration has to come back to the way that they see the world, my way or the highway. unable to entertain other people's ideas. And that often results in micromanagement, claiming others' successes like they are your own. More people that work with them, the more significance they feel, the more important they feel. And it's another thing to be aware of. It's not that we can't work with these people, but we need to have an awareness of those displays in our own lives, but also an awareness of those that we are working with. Two more. It also comes into self-awareness in terms of our performance. Now, forgive me for using the term performance when we're talking about ministry, but I'm talking about some of the tasks that we do, like preaching. So as I perform the task of preaching, have I got an awareness of whether it's speaking to the people in the room? Have I got an awareness of whether I've got that connection or the length of time or my stutters or stammers or whether I stay still or don't when I'm preaching? Am I able to refine my skills? And the answer is yes, with some self-awareness. Other areas could be chairing meetings or delivering one-to-one sessions in a management form. There's some of the things that we have to perform in our ministry, the tasks. Self-awareness can really help us improve in some of those areas. And then finally, if you're seeking to build a team or you're working in a team environment, if you don't know yourself, how on earth can you bring people onto your team who will compensate or contradict some of your biases? Yeah? So understanding who you are means you can start to form healthy teams, because if I'm not the detail guy, then I'm able to bring somebody in who really will deliver the details so we don't all end up in prison, yeah? We can think of who are the people who might be able to take an idea and execute it or deliver it and make it happen rather than just leave it up in the sky somewhere. We need to think about our skills so we can bring others around us to enable and strengthen the team. Okay, so I'm going to hand back to Nicole, and we're going to start now to think about maybe some models that can help us in understanding ourselves and bringing a greater sense of self-awareness. Thanks, Nicole.
That's great. Thank you. Okay. I wonder if you've had one of these moments. Probably we can all identify that, where we're in conversation with somebody and you notice perhaps they've got lettuce in their teeth. What do you do? Do you tell them they've got lettuce in their teeth? Do you just carry on? It's awkward, isn't it? It's embarrassing. We might have one of those moments here at ELS. What do you do? What's even more mortifying, and this might actually show you how selfish I am, but what's more mortifying is you go to the bathroom after a conversation and you realise you're the one with lettuce in the teeth. And you think, it's 4 o'clock, I had lunch at 12, it's not good, is it? I've been walking around all day looking like this. What do you do? Turn to the person next to you. Do you tell the person or not? Would you want to be told or not? Okay, I'll go with a show of hands. How many people would tell someone if they had lettuce in their teeth? Okay, that's quite a lot. Okay, hands down. How many wouldn't say anything? There's a few honest. I'm a bit like that. I think I'd be too embarrassed to say anything. But how many of us would want someone to tell us? Everybody, yeah. We want to know, don't we? Well, I think when we come to thinking about self-awareness, we can use, as Dave said, various different tools. And a lot of my work is in using psychometric tools to help people with self-awareness. And one of those things here is Johari's window. You can see up on the screen. And when you're thinking about self-awareness, I think we can fit into some of these different sections, but there's that stuff that we are aware of in our own life that other people know about too. Like it could be we talk too much, We talk too much. We cut across people's conversation. Like, we know that about ourselves. Other people know it. We try our best to do something, hopefully, maybe. Or maybe we don't. There is that sense sometimes. I was chatting to someone the other day, and they went, oh, I'm totally self-aware. Absolutely, I'm self-aware. I know this. But they weren't doing anything about it in the sense of, well, that's just me. That's how I am. Oh, I'm not too sure. Self-awareness is something that is about knowing ourselves to help other people as well. So there's that section of us. And then there's stuff that's hidden self, which, you know, we know about ourselves, but no one else knows. And then there's this other side, which is things we're not too sure about ourselves. The one there in the bottom corner, unknown to self. I'm not going to go there because that's not my area of expertise, stuff that we don't know and no one knows. Don't worry, okay? We're not going to do that this session. But there is this other section, which is things that we might be blind to. It's like lettuce in the teeth. Perhaps we're not too sure that we talk. We don't realise or recognise in ourselves that we talk too much, but everyone else thinks it. And it becomes like a blind spot. And some of the tools we use in psychometrics and some of the models that we share, as Dave's just shared and I'm just going to share, might help to identify, oh, actually, I'm like that. And I didn't realise or recognise that people might see it or interpret it that way. I think one of the best things that we can do is have somebody in our lives that will challenge us. First and foremost, that's the best thing. It's not always our best friend, but it's somebody that we can just go to and they will be absolutely honest with us in a caring and compassionate way to say, there's this. You might not see it, but there's this. I would say, if you take anything away from today, take that. Find somebody that can just be that person that you go to that will be able to say, you know what, you've got lettuce in your teeth. I love you, but there's this. And that's what self-awareness is. It's about understanding maybe some of those blind spots, because we're here to help others. If we're leaders, then we're leading team. We're leading other people. And so we really need to be aware of things in our life so that we can help others flourish and thrive and reach their potential, that we don't hinder them, but we help them. The golden rule in scripture, of course, is treat others as you would want to be treated. And I live by that, and I'm sure you do as well. But there's another rule that is a little bit different, and it's treat others as they want to be treated. Because not everybody wants to be treated like we do. Not everybody likes what I like, and not everybody sees the world the way I see the world. And if we're not careful, we will presume and assume that just everybody thinks like us. Everybody sees things the way we see things and would want to be spoken to and communicated to in the way we would. Do you ever hear yourself sort of saying things like, I just don't believe that person would do something like that? Like, I do. I say it all the time. I can't believe it. Would you believe it? You know, we do. But actually, we're all so different. One of the tools that I use and Dave uses, and I'm sure that you've come across, is a psychometric tool called DISC, and it talks about different styles and different colours, and you might have done this before, and you go away, and I'm red, and I'm green, and yellow, and blue. And we're going to have a quick look at those today, not to define us, not to box us in, but just to help us see things in ourselves. So if I just put this up, this is the different colours, and you can see there's some choice words there that describe the different styles. This is about behaviour styles. Describes the different type of styles that are attributed to each colour. And we're never just one colour, we're all of these colours. We are all these colours, but we are these colours in varying degrees. So some of us will resonate more with the red, and we will be very strong, our natural style will be very red. So like any table that we're sat around that we come to, we're kind of red. Others of us might be a little bit across all the colours and a little bit more flexible with our styles, and we sort of change a little bit depending on context or situation. But we can adapt. So I am green, okay? I'll just say that. I'm green. When you do this, you score out of 100. I happen to be a case study green because I'm 100. So, like, I'm right up there as a green. So I kind of bring that to most tables that I sit around. But I do have to adapt when I'm leading. I can't be green all the time in everything. I do have to be red sometimes, and I do have to bring my red up. And when I do that, that's when I'm not my natural style, it means I'm just have to expend more energy into it. So I get energized by green, and it's really easy for me, but when I need to be more red, it just takes more effort for me to be red. So have a little quick look at those colors. Can you see those words okay? Yeah? Okay, turn to the person next to you, and just in a gut reaction, where would you put yourself in this particular color diagram? Okay, good stuff. Right, I'm going to do a whistle-stop tour about these four different styles really, really quickly to try and just give you a bit of an idea of what they are, and so it can help us understand ourselves better and maybe help us see how other people see us too. So this red style, the D stands for dominance, and they are more task-orientated, more thinkers, and more extrovert. They're really driven, and they're direct, and they're decisive. They're fast-paced. They love a goal. They love strategy. They're always moving forward. They like freedom to make their own decisions, and they like to be in charge of things. Honesty is important to them. Directness. Say it as it is. I just want to know. Tell me. They're going places. They don't really like inefficiency. They don't like incompetence. They want to get things done, and they want to get things done right now, and they want to drive things forward. They can get impatient. Any of us get impatient at times? They can get impatient. They can get frustrated. And when we think about the colors, we think about good day, bad day. And on a bad day, the red could come across a bit demanding. Here's some little chuckles. They could come across a little bit demanding. They could come across a bit aggressive. They might not see it. They might describe it as passion. I'm just being passionate about this. And the rest of us are thinking, oh, but I think you're being a little bit aggressive there, actually. It doesn't feel right. You're being a bit demanding. You're in my space. And that's when we talk about lettuce in the teeth. Because we might think, I'm just getting things done. I'm just moving things forward. I'm just passionate about this cause. And for some people, it's just too much, and it's going too fast, and it's coming across too aggressive. If you're not this style, you're more gentle, you're more accommodating, more unobtrusive. You might struggle to make decisions. Yeah. The yellow style. That stands for influence. The I stands for influence. It's how people influence, how somebody influences and impacts other people. They are people orientated. Dave said this before about the difference between task and people. They're people orientated and they're extroverts. I don't know what you were like when you were thinking about ELS, but if you're a yellow style, you think ELS, amazing. I can connect with lots and lots of people. It's going to be wonderful. It's like every stranger is a potential friend for a yellow. They love it. They love meeting people. They're inspiring, enthusiastic. They're optimistic. They're creative. They're full of ideas. They'll give you loads of ideas. They'll talk ideas. They're full of fun and energy. They're the people that I call the jazz hands. The party starts when the yellows turn up, yeah? They're full of life and fun. They're happy. They're positive. They don't really like being told what to do. They hate long reports and lots of detail. It's just, don't send them emails that are carrying on full of waffle. They don't like that very much. They like being needed. They like a bit of recognition. I think of the yellow a bit like a Labrador puppy. Okay? And I don't, if you're high yellow, I'm quite yellow too. So like Labrador puppies, because everybody loves a Labrador puppy, don't they? Do you love a Labrador puppy? They're the cutest thing ever. But they do need a bit of attention. They do need a little bit, it's okay, a little bit of recognition. Your yellows, really creative, enthusiastic. They motivate us. They've got the charisma. on a bad day, they could come across a little pushy, a little superficial, because they can exaggerate and they can overpromise. They don't realize, but they're optimists. So they think they can get everything done. It's okay, it'll be fine. I work with a yellow and a high yellow, and it's 5 to 10. The meeting starts at 10. It takes 10 minutes to walk to the meeting. It's fine, we'll get there for 10. We won't get there for 10. It takes 10 minutes. It's now 5 to. It's fine, it'll be okay. It's not going to be okay. And they turn up late to the meeting. Not okay for some of us who think turning up to meetings is really important on time. Yes, good, okay. So that's your yellow. The S stands for steadiness, the green, steadiness. These are people-orientated people, but they're more introvert. So whereas the yellow approaches ELS and goes, yeah, great, I can meet lots of people, it's going to be fantastic. The green thinks, ELS, great, I can catch up with such and such because I haven't seen them for a year and it's going to be great because I really want to talk to them. They're like, love people, but in a deeper kind of nurturing, caring way in those relationships. They love having a tribe, not so much the networking. They love team. They love being helpful. They're warm, friendly, patient people who are really good at listening. They want everyone to be okay. Are you okay? Are you all right? Do people belong? They're very inclusive. They're calm. They're often systematic, methodical, non-demonstrative. So you don't always see what's going on in the green style's emotions. You don't see it on the outside. It's always calm. Inside, they could be very stressed, very frustrated, very excited, but you don't always see it. It's going on inside. They don't like being criticized, really. They don't like being shouted at. I mean, nobody does, right? But they really don't like being shouted at. On a bad day, they can procrastinate a bit, speaking as a high green. They can procrastinate a bit, slow to make decisions. They can be a bit time-wasting sometimes and can lead to a little bit of ineffectiveness. If you're not so green, you're more impulsive, progressive, a bit more restless and expressive. So you're green. And then the last one, C, stands for compliance, how we're compliant to rules and procedures. This is the blue. They are task-orientated like the red, but they are introverted. So this style has a passion for understanding, for analysing. They've got really high standards. They're great at critical thinking and they ask really, really good questions. They're precise, meticulous, orderly. They love the detail of things. They love the background information. They love the logic. They love going through stuff. They're really reliable and they're quite reserved, but they really do things well and get things done well. Problem is with the blue style, it can mean that they don't like making mistakes, so they can be quite self-critical because they're quite perfectionist. Whereas some of us would go, fine, it's great, it's brilliant. They're like, oh, that's not quite good enough. Not quite how I wanted it to be. The rest of us are thinking it's fabulous. On a bad day, they could come across as stubborn, a little bit nitpicking, maybe a bit pedantic at times. If you're not blue, you're more independent, more bold, perhaps risk-taker, more free-spirited. You can see there, then, these different styles. You'll fit to probably one of them more than any others, but we all span, like I say, through them all. There can be some natural clashes between the colours. Why don't you turn to the person next to you and think, what might be the natural clashes? Off you go. Just have a moment. Okay, so natural clashes could be maybe that you've identified. Sometimes the red and the green could be a potential, and the blue and the yellow could be a potential to clash. Obviously, they've got the amazing potential to work brilliantly together. That's what we're hoping for, but there sometimes can be a little bit of a clash. One way to remember these colours before I hand over to Dave is this. You will probably go out for dinner at some point during ELS. We like going out for dinner. Think of it like this. When you go for dinner, you can probably identify a person's colour by how they order. So your reds will go in and go, steak, I'm having steak, I'm having steak. Boom. And if the steak's not on the menu, they're having it anyway. I'll have a steak. They've decided. Your yellows go in and they chat away and the waiter comes and the waiter says, what would you like? Oh, I haven't even looked at the menu yet. Just give me 5 minutes. Waiter comes back and then they say, I still haven't looked at the menu. You know what? I'll just have what she's having. It's absolutely fine. Your green character is, right, guys, I would quite like a starter. Is anyone having starters? No, we're not having starters. Okay, it's fine. No, I'm not going to have a starter either. No, that's fine. We're just going desserts. Okay, we'll do desserts then. Fine, mains, desserts, great. Okay, good. And then you find out someone's a vegetarian. Oh, she's a vegetarian. Or perhaps we should all go vegetarian. That's your green. And your blue is, obviously, they've checked out the menu before they've even got to the restaurant.
That's brilliant. Okay, so in a moment, what we're going to try and do is apply that model to maybe some of the ministry settings we might find ourselves in. Where are the clashes? Where are the tensions? How can I work with people who are different from me in order to flourish and in order to get effectiveness throughout the ministry or the organization I find myself in? Just in case you haven't realized, if you just Google DISC test, there's free tests you can do online. You can do these with your teams. Be careful not to turn into a psychoanalyst yourself. Just kind of take it for what it is. Use it in whatever way you can. But there are ways that you can use these tests just to help create discussion within your team. But I'm just going to give really quickly, in 1 minute, 10 really simple things that you could do to start to increase your own self-awareness. Because if we're not self-aware, then we're going to start running into tensions with those who we bump into. So the first one is this: take time to intentionally get to know yourself. In the same way we get to know other people in friendship, actually we need to work at getting to know ourselves. Be intentional about that for the rest of 2024. Encourage others on your team to get to know themselves too, so you can think about how those interactions are going to work. If people have done their homework, then there'll be hopefully a less bumpy road in working together. Where you come across tensions, have honest conversations. You know, don't have to be direct. You don't have to confront people, but we can be authentic. We can be real. I really struggle when you do that because it really causes this. Just be honest and open with one another. Have clear expectations. So if you are clearly one of those people, whichever one you are, then have clear expectations and communicate those expectations as a boss or as a subordinate within the organization you find yourself in. Find some robust accountability. You know, who are the people who are going to speak into your life and challenge you internally and externally? Next one, don't attack the person. Challenge the behavior. Yes, don't go after the person. None of these are right or wrong. These are who we are. Don't attack the person, but it is okay to challenge the behavior that you come across. Invite welcome feedback on every level. Feedback is the key to self-awareness. Look for feedback in every opportunity that you get and take that feedback on board. Next point, these are different approaches. One isn't right and one isn't wrong. One isn't better, although Reds would think that they're better than everyone else. But one isn't better than the other, and we just need to accept that people are different. Two more. Coach or manage people by asking questions to enable space for them to learn themselves. Don't fix everything for people. Let them grow and let them develop. And the final thing is, mistakes are part of the process. We don't have to go ahead of people and sort everything out and give the impression without allowing people to make mistakes and do their own workings out. Mistakes are part of the process when it becomes part of this self-awareness. Okay, so let's take a moment. Let's apply this model to some of the ministry settings we find ourselves in. How do we do that? And Nicole is going to take us on that journey.
So when we're thinking about those different styles, the way we can apply it is thinking, just breaking down all the different things we do as leaders within the church context. And so I'm just going to give you a couple of examples, but you can do this with everything in relation to thinking about how those different styles would react to or whatever it is, the area of that particular ministry. So if you're thinking about something like vision and strategy and you're thinking about your team, First of all, in your leadership team, you might be thinking, okay, when we're doing vision and strategy, you've got your yellows who are going to be really optimistic. They're going to be charismatic and, yeah, let's go. We've got a vision. We've got lots of things to do and we've got great words on the wall and, yeah, that's going to be amazing. And some people are going to be really on board. But then you've got your blue and your red. They might want some sort of strategy and some sort of plan and some sort of detail for that. And you think about that in your team, but you think about that in the church context as well, with all the different people that are in our congregations. There's all those different styles going on. And sometimes if you're the yellow optimist that you've got the vision and you want to run with it and you're going for it, and then somebody comes along and goes, yeah, but we don't have enough finance for that and we haven't got this and where's the plan? And it can feel a bit like they're putting cold water on what we want to do. And, you know, we're like, you know, come on, we're just going for Jesus. We can do this. But actually for them, it's really important that they've got some sort of plan and strategy. They're just a little bit worried and concerned about it. Not critical, but just a bit, you know, what's actually going on here? So it's think through things like that when we're presenting vision or when we're thinking about strategy and we're working with our teams. There's going to be different styles looking at it in different ways. And it's great and really good for us to be mindful of that. It's the same with any idea, you know, any event that you might put on. If you're the type of person that flies by the seat of your pants, that might not be great for the person that doesn't. Yeah, we'll do this. It's okay. Don't worry about it. We'll get it done. We'll have this event. We'll get Harry Styles over. It'll be fine. And everyone's like, what? Hang on. But where's the plan? When are we going to do all this? When are we going to meet? Dave alluded to before about, you know, when you have a team meeting. For some of us, we'll just rock up to a team meeting. It's fine. Doesn't matter. Right. What are we talking about tonight? Okay, we're going to talk about this. Other people, that's not great. They need an agenda. They want an agenda. They want to know things beforehand so they can prepare. For the green style, they want to mull things over. The reds can make decisions really quickly, and they might make decisions in the moment in the meeting, but the green might have to go away and have a think about it. They want to be prepared. Punctuality. That's a big one, isn't it? Some of us, you know, we say the meeting's going to start at 10. And so some of us, we're like, the meeting starts at 10. It's at 10. If you're red, you start at 10 because you've got things to do. You've got places to be. If you're blue, you start at 10 because it's the right thing to do. You said 10. If you're yellow, it's like 10. Oh, whatever. Okay, it doesn't matter. Oh, we're going to finish at 11. Oh, well, it's now 11:30. It's all right. Don't worry. That's not good if you've said it's going to finish at 11. It's to be mindful of all these different things. Preparation, agenda, timing, decision making. We have different styles interacting in different ways. Think about communication, our emails to one another. How many of you text, you know, when you do a text message, how many of you would put okay, that's it. That's your text message. Okay. Oh, my days. If I get a text message saying, okay, I'll be like, oh, my days, I've offended them. I've done something wrong. What have I done? And they just, it's like, that style is, why use 10 words when you can use one? I'm of the more mindset, why use one when you can use 10, right? And stick some emojis in there and it's all happy days. But when you think about emailing to one another, how's it going? So there's loads of different ways, and I know time is a bit against us. Dave said about feedback. How do we want to do appraisals? How do we want to feedback to our team? Some need a more gentle approach. Some just, you know, more honest and direct. How are we going to do feedback? So there's loads of different areas. And if you just go through all the different things in church life and think just about how the different styles might approach those things, because so often conflict comes just from misunderstanding. I read that email. They sounded rude. They weren't being rude at all. It's just a different... That's not what they intended. But then suddenly we feel something against them. We've got a misunderstanding. There's something in us. It leads to conflict. So usually it boils down to just not understanding each other brilliantly. David, just something.
Brilliant. In a moment, we're going to give an opportunity just for 5 minutes of interaction, a few questions, and then we're going to finish with a little exercise that hopefully you'll be able to take away and use to increase your own self-awareness. But let me just tell you a little story, because one of the other challenges I think we're going to find in most Elim churches is we're also working with people with different personalities, but different cultural backgrounds, different expectations from a whole host of cultures and settings. There's a brilliant book called The Culture Gap you might want to get hold of, or one of the Global Leadership Summits about 3 or 4 years ago, and there was a short kind of TED talk on this topic. And it looked into the idea that there was a lady from France. Now, France are known to be fairly direct. We just say it as it is. The Americans, on the other hand, like to flannel it up and kind of just give a little bit of waffle around the actual thing that they're trying to say. So the French lady was headhunted, put in an American organization, and was 6 months into the post, managed by an American boss. And the headhunter rang the French lady and said, "How are you getting on in the role?" "I'm doing it really well. Every time I have an appraisal, my boss tells me I'm fantastic and finishes the meeting by telling me I'm fantastic." So the headhunter rings the boss and says, "How's this lady doing in her role?" And the guy says, "She's absolutely hopeless. I've been telling her every meeting that there's this thing she needs to do, but she never does it." So she puts two and two together that the feedback is give something positive, tell them what you really want to say, and then say something positive. But all this lady hears is, "Oh, I must be doing a really good job." So don't just think personality, think about cultural settings, think about a whole host of things that could influence how miscommunication can creep into your setting. Okay, so what we want to do is just give you an opportunity. What have you learned? What are you taking away? What has kind of stood out to you? Have a little conversation around your tables. We might, if time allows, just have one or two questions or bits of feedback. Conversation around your table. What stood out to me? What am I going to take away? And how's it going to help my church ministry? Off you go. And try to be self-aware in your conversations. Okay, just another 30 seconds around your tables. Something you're going to take away, something you can apply to your setting. Okay, let's face back to the front. Time is disappearing, and because both myself and Nicole like to finish on time, we will. So we're not going to go over. So we won't get lots of feedback because of the number of people in the room. Just to say, though, Nicole and I will hang around at the front. So if anyone wants to kind of do a bit of digging or find out a bit more about this for kind of 5 or 10 minutes afterwards, we're more than happy to answer one or two questions. And really what we're hoping to do in today's session is just maybe lift the lid to create some awareness and say, you know, maybe some of those tensions that we're finding in our teams, that there are some ways through and some solutions if we only do some of the hard work to create some additional self-awareness. So what I want to finish with is just introducing you to 6 things that you will know very well. In fact, you're probably looking them pretty much every day of your lives. And I want to give you something that is really obvious and tangible, because it will just be a reminder to you about, actually, I need to be more aware of myself, my conduct, my behavior, my attitudes, and all of those things. So I'm going to introduce you to 6 mirrors. The first one's the bathroom mirror. We probably all looked in it this morning. Hands up if you didn't, I can tell. So the idea is that in the morning, you look in the bathroom mirror and you take an honest assessment of yourselves. If I'm honest, there are some things I see that I don't like, but I do take that honest assessment. And I decide in front of that bathroom mirror, how do I want to present myself to the world today? How do I want to present myself to the world today? Hopefully, the way I present myself gets more and more authentic and less putting on a show and trying to demonstrate something. How do I want to present myself to the world today? What actions am I going to take? What choices am I going to make to present myself, but hopefully more of the character of Christ through myself in the world? So we have the bathroom mirror. Now, in the hotel we're staying in, there's one of these mirrors called a magnifying mirror. And it's a bit scary when you look in it because you don't really recognize yourself. And if you get too close, it makes you jump. But there are some moments in our lives where we need to take a look in the magnifying mirror and spotlight certain things. Maybe the things that our team keep mentioning that we need to deal with, but we haven't got round to yet. We need to have a close examination of that particular experience. You know, as Pentecostals, we need to come before God and say, God, examine my heart. Help me deal with this, not just on the surface, but at the root. I need to really deal with something. The role of the Spirit in bringing to our attention and magnifying, zooming in on some of these situations. So we have the magnifying mirror. Then there's the rear view mirror. The rear view mirror is a brilliant thing in the car, but if you drive your car looking in it all the time, it's not going to go well. You know, and some people do go through life, don't they, constantly looking at all the past achievements. So, you know, I was great when this happened, or the former church, my team used to be brilliant, the ones that I've just left, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, and those are true statements, but it's not going to help you drive forward if you spend the entire time looking in the rear view mirror. However, there are some things as believers, as Jesus followers, we need to pay attention to some of that stuff, because it's influencing the direction that we're now going in. So pay an appropriate amount of attention to that which we find in the rearview mirror. Journaling is a great way of just looking back on different situations. You've left ALS. I'm going to just scribble. What's God been saying to me? How am I going to live differently as a result of it? Just take some time to look in the rearview mirror, but help it to focus you to move forward. Nicole alluded to this one before, the wing mirror, the blind spots. You know, we look in our car and there's this brilliant contraption on the side of your car that helps you to see things that are hard to see. And if you give some attention to it, you'll see the things that are in the blind spots that might cause you some collisions in life if you don't check it from time to time. What are the blind spots that you need to pay some attention to, that you need to focus on? We talked about feedback. Feedback is a brilliant way. So when you're having an appraisal or you're working with your staff team, don't just ask them how they're getting on. Ask the rest of the team how they're getting on. Get as much information as you can in order to enable somebody to move forward. This is a word to me. I've underlined it in green in my notes. Do the hard work of listening and looking long enough. Don't be content with not knowing. We need to find out some of these things. Be inquisitive in order to help us move forward. Two more mirrors. Remember the funfair mirror? You know, where you've got that distorted view of yourself? So you think, actually, everyone thinks you're wonderful, you know, and you're the best visionary ideas person, da, 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 da. But actually, that's your perception. That's what you're seeing in the mirror, but it's not what everybody else is seeing. So just be aware of those things that you think you're reflecting this, but actually other people are seeing something completely different. How do we address that? Well, we talk to people, we get feedback, we have coaches and mentors, people, good friends who speak into our life to ensure we haven't got a distorted view of ourselves. And then this is my hope and prayer. This is what I want you to take away from today's session, and we're just on time. How do we start to live our lives in this way? You know, when you walk past the shop front and it's a pane of glass, it's not even a mirror, but you walk past the pane of glass and you just see a reflection of yourself, you note something, but then you carry on. I wonder what it would look like if we were able to reflect in action. So in that moment that I go to the table and I'm about to dominate everything that's going on, I'm about to talk about myself for the next 5 minutes and nobody else is going to get a word in, when I'm 30 seconds into that pitch, I go, ooh, this isn't probably the best thing to do in this situation. I'm going to adjust course. I'm reflecting in action and I'm changing my behavior in order to recognize other people might be able to contribute to the conversation and have something to say. How are you reflecting Jesus? In the book of James, it says, take an honest, a sober judgment of yourself. The fool is the man who looks in the mirror and walks away and forget what he looks like. Make sure that if we're going to be the best leaders that we possibly can be, that we're leaders who are self-aware. Let's just take a moment to finish in prayer together. Why don't we stand to our feet? Heavenly Father, we pray that as a movement, Elim can be the healthiest movement it can possibly be. Because you're awakening in each one of us your reflection, your nature, your character. God, you've made us in so many different ways, and we're so grateful that not everybody's the same as me. But God, help us to draw the best out of others. Help us to be aware of how we influence others, how we affect others, and how we can build your kingdom together. Lord, we pray that you can help us to be self-aware leaders who bear the image of Christ and reflect you in this world. We pray that in Jesus' name. Amen. Amen.
Dave, Nicole, you're a gift to us, a blessing. Thank you for that. Let's just give Dave and Nicole a real big round of applause. So, folks, our next session in this stream is tomorrow morning at 11:30. We have Leon Evans and Shireen Agbalusi looking at leadership health in every season. Another great session. So we look forward to seeing you then. If you, some people I know are staying for a meeting, a little meeting here, but if not, if you can vacate this venue, we're going to start to get it ready for our business sessions in 45 minutes. Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoy the rest of whatever you're doing this afternoon. Bless you.